increase in HIV risk associated with DMPA use, substantial uncertainty in the data as well as how to act on these data, and tremendous domestic and global benefit of hormonal contraception, which has unfortunately resulted in a public health and a policy impasse. What is not needed are more observational studies with bad measurement, infrequent measurement of contraception, poor measurement of confounders, and modest conduct, because we already have too many studies which are of highest high, not really, at least minimal quality in this field. There is a case to be made for better data, and I think as we have maybe a meeting of the minds here between the two positions, we need to definitively determine whether this contraceptive HIV relationship exists, including, as Ward alluded to, the potential for a randomized clinical trial, which is a debate in of itself, which would be good to have here someday. It arguably can be done, says a man named Cates et al. From Lancet from earlier this year, because of uncertainty in the data and need for definitive data to modify policy. Equipoise as a result of this uncertainty, and other studies demonstrating that randomization to and continuation of contraceptive methods after randomization is truly possible. And we need to, I very much agree with Ward, deliver the variety of contraceptive options in all places, particularly in places where contraception is not effectively implemented at this time, so women have true contraceptive choice. But without knee-jerk withdrawing a highly accepted, widely used, and important method without the ability to deliver an alternative. So vote carefully, vote smartly, and vote con. Thank you.
Well, I think both our debaters have given really outstanding stands on either side of this, but with some overlap, such as the observational data purgatory. I think they both agree on to some element. So this is now open for discussion. If any one of you has any passionate feelings about this particular motion, some of the statements they've made, or whether trial that includes Depo-Provera is implemented to try and get more definitive data, an issue that is being debated in the ethical realm, please come to the microphone. So any comments? And I think I see Sten coming over.
Sten, Vermont Medical University. Dr. Cates, okay. Could I ask you to describe the abundant variety of contraception alternatives that lend themselves to every three-month administration?
Well, I argue that every three-month administration is not long enough. It creates inconvenience. It's cumbersome for the women to return in settings that you yourself function in most of the time. Women frequently have to take half a day to come to the clinic, and are oftentimes they're faced with stockouts, and they don't fit in the exact window that they can receive DMPA, hence the very high discontinuation rates. However, for WHO Tier 1 methods, whether they're two possible implantable methods, one a single rod, etonorgestrel, these steroid names are tough to master, and two rods, which is levonorgestrel, or there are also two IUDs, a copper IUD, and now an IUD with levonorgestrel in it. So those are four separate long-acting methods that are much better options in my mind, and Jared's mind too, for women who are currently using DMPA.
He's reading my mind. He says he's reading my mind. There really is something to be said for the In contrast to what Ward is saying, there is something to be said and something to keep in mind for a contraceptive option that is completely discrete and able to be started and stopped as easily as something like a three-month injectable.
But the problem with DMPA is when it's stopped, there's a very long time for return to fertility. For these long-acting methods I'm talking about, both the IUD and the implant, when they are removed, there's a much faster return to fertility for the woman. So if she changes her mind and wants to get pregnant, ironically and coincidentally, the longer acting methods provide a better option.
Hi, Holly Howard from California. I didn't bring 200 euros, so I know I have to vote at the end. So I have two outstanding questions that I didn't hear answered regarding some arguments. And the first was, I didn't hear Dr. Beaton respond to Dr. Kate's comment about the biology and prepping primates who are in HIV trials with DMPA. So I would love to hear your rebuttal to that. And do you want me to let them do that or ask the second one?
Go ahead with the second.
And the second question is, although it's been a while, I spent some time working in Africa, and I'm wondering about the feasibility of using some of these tier one methods in some of the global settings where HIV risk and maternal morbidity is highest. And I know where we were, IUD and implants would not have been feasible. And so are those really options for those populations?
People are not monkeys. Oh, but if they were, we would have so many HIV prevention strategies if everything worked in monkeys. If everything worked in people the way it worked in monkeys. In all seriousness, the biologic hypotheses by which DMPA seems to increase HIV SIV susceptibility in monkeys, when you try to see if it's a change in vaginal microbiology or vaginal histology, it hasn't panned out in studies of women. And so the carry forward from the monkeys to the people as a intermediate biologic step is not there. So how do we know it works, and it seems to have this effect in monkeys, but whether that predicts whether it truly has an effect in people is not clear. And as well, the rest of the biologic literature in this is as much all over the map as the epidemiologic literature.
Why don't you, I mean, the issue is how can we get the WHO tier one methods into low-resource settings right now. And by the way, low-resource settings includes rural clinics in my state of North Carolina, whereas if a woman comes in to a family planning clinic, she's offered Depo or pills or condoms and then referred out for the tier one methods, the implants and the IUDs. Having said that, there now is a major initiative underwritten by the Gates Foundation as well as NIH and a trial that Jared is the head of, called Aspire, that is really moving and offering options in these clinics of tier one methods, training women and in IUD insertion, and now in South Africa, training them in implant insertion. It's just been approved. Both of these methods are now approved in South Africa, and we're seeing a very rapid substitution effect. Not a removal of DMPA. There still, as Jared says, are people who do prefer that despite all of its problems, but there is, as fast as we can do it, a movement to train and supply clinics with these implants and IUDs.
Over here. Hi, Patty. Oh, can you hear me? Patty Kissinger from New Orleans. So thank you very much. Really lively debate. So my one question is, what about adolescents? So much like it would marginalize people from developing countries or lesser resourced countries, what about adolescents? Usually Depo is a gateway contraception for adolescents, and so they can't do sterilization in a 15-year-old, and they can't, I don't know, I don't think they can do IUD and implants, but I don't know that. They can?
Actually, yes, they can do, and that's a great question.
No.
The gateway will change from Depo to implants and IUDs as more and more clinicians get trained to do it.
Hi, my name is Blair Armistead from Richmond, Virginia, and I'm actually moving to Seattle to attend UW in the fall, so good to see you. So taking this data all over the map, assuming that it isn't all over the map and assuming that there is a clear connection with non-barrier method contraceptives and HIV risk, and also considering that both HIV prevention and access to family planning are two major goals in the global health agenda, where does that leave us?
Impasse. My rebuttal. It's a really difficult place to be in. I think for those of us who we both work and talk a lot about this field a lot, the great challenge is when is information enough, and when is it enough to motivate policy, and can you be moving many policies and many scientific decisions at the same time? Because sitting and waiting when something seems like it's important doesn't make anyone feel good.
And we are living, unfortunately, in uncertainty, and we both will conclude and in the middle ground of the need for more data, and we're getting perilously close. That's the wrong adverb. We're getting wonderfully close to attempting to do a true randomized trial of these key methods.
Okay, and the last word from the audience.
Yes, just to add, I'm Dr. Joda from Nigeria, and just to add that IUDs, implants, are in fact in many developing countries. In Nigeria, it's very much available. Clinicians, nurses are trained to administer and to provide information and access to IUDs and implants, not plants specifically. Thank you.
I think there's been a really very enlightening debate over this whole issue, and it is a bit of an impasse and a critical time that we need to move forward on this particular motion. So I'm going to call the motion, and I'm going to have you vote again. Remember, if you want to abstain, that's okay. 200 euros to me at the end. All those who are in favor of the motion, that Depo-Provera use increases STD and HIV risk, the side that Ward was representing, please raise your hand. Oh, it's more than 0.1% now. So there was a sway of vote, but let's see how many people vote on the side of Jared Baiton that it does not increase the risk. The majority has it. So congratulations to both of you. Ward did sway some people, but Jared takes the majority. Thank you, everyone.